and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Kara Knickerbocker. Kara Knickerbocker is an internationally published writer and world traveler from Sagertown, Pennsylvania. She earned her BA in English from Westminster College in 2012. Her poetry and essays appeared in or are forthcoming from Long Ridge Review, One Sentence Poems, Pittsburgh Poetry Review, and the anthology Voices from the Attic, Volume 22, among others. Her poetry collection won first place in its category at the 2016 Sigma Tide Delta International English Convention. Her debut chapbook, Next to Everything That Is Breakable, is forthcoming from Finishing Line Press. Knickerbocker currently lives in Pittsburgh, where she works at Carnegie Mellon University and writes with the Mad Women in the Attic at Carlo University. You can find more of her at www.karenknickerbocker.com. Hi, Kara. Welcome to Prosody.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, great. We're excited to hear your work from this forthcoming collection. Can you begin by reading us some poems?
Sure. This first one is called Spring Beast. Blackberried and full, I caught the last flight out of Charleston. I dreaded the slush up north, the way my eyes understood goodbye. So I hunkered for hours in the airport bar, fingering long-neck bottles of beer with my index finger like you did my throat. I tried to construct poetry from another man's facial features just to see if I could. I can't. Leaving never bothered me when I knew how to write the next line. But I am greeting April with no words, only whiskey doubles, the naked itch to taste you still. I am going back to Pittsburgh alone to starve on the altar of a twin-size mattress, to see the face of a dog in my dreams. So in addition to poetry, I'm really passionate about travel. I've been to over 25 countries, and I write a lot about those experiences that I've had or the emotions that come from them. So that's the inspiration for the next couple poems. They told me, don't take taxis from outside the Lima airport. Danger's written on the license plate. Theft will snatch you quicker than you can pray to Pachamama. There are men always hungry for something more, they said. Book a cab from inside. So I did. Late 40s, thick Spanish tongue, leathered skin, he let out an odd laugh at the sight of my hiking boots. You can sit up front, he motioned, as I climbed into the back seat, the weight of my pack now a comfort. Fragments of language flew as we talked Cusco, ceviche, cervezas. I gripped the door handle close as he scanned me in the rear view, said, muy bonita, me gusta mucho, spun around, slid a hand fast up my thigh, split me in a place I can't tell you. Salt. I will eat paella and pan con tomate until I die, if you want me to. Salt clawing and clutching the corners of my mouth, like your newborn child's tiny hands around her mother's finger. But we don't speak about it in the kitchen. We let infidelity churn in wedding pots and knead curved skin like bread dough. We savor a kiss. You feed it to me in spoonfuls, in haste, and wipe the edges neatly with your napkin before you go. Your apron is burned in the morning. I do not ask why. If you're asking why I'm leaving, because this row of brick houses ghosts with heads on backwards, because my skin sleeps under your nail beds, because there isn't a color red I've loved since the car crash. Because even birds fly south. Because without wings, your lips travel down just the same because I let you. Because religion was the well-oiled machine of our bodies. because thoughts of a baby's open mouth, because I am egg yolk, because I cannot imagine anything more breakable than if I stay. All safety's off. It was Christmas Day in our backyard when I first shot my dad's hunting rifle, felt it kick back into my shoulder as he looked on, keeping distance as shells went flying. I fingered the trigger, breathed the weight of it all, burning hot metal, swallowing painted targets, my shaky hands steadying and aiming. All safety's off. And I thought, here I am, deep in December, sweating, because there was something within the chamber I couldn't point to, barreling through me just the same. And the weapon clicks, white knuckle grip. I need to reload, but what's the point if all my ghosts wear bulletproof vests and don't understand the word no or stop, and my dad yells, bullseye, and I drop the gun. So about a year ago, I was experiencing a lot of health issues, and I found out that I needed a pacemaker. Being 25 and pretty healthy, it came as a complete shock to me, and I felt so much surrounding the surgery that I had to write it down. So these next two poems take inspiration from that experience. The first one is called Beating, and it's after Diane Glancy. If they would have prescribed an easier pill to swallow than news that this device was necessary to keep me breathing. If they could have explained the eternity in 20 seconds of a heartbeat stopping. If they could have warned me that the first time wouldn't work and anesthesia would deliver me to the table again before seeing my family. If they could have prepared my mother before she saw my adult body naked in a tub, or me before feeling her hands help bathe, dress me. If they could have just said, never mind wearing a strapless wedding dress. If they could have written in the reports how wonderful it is that you're a runner, but you should probably find a new hobby now. If they could have diagnosed the symptoms of their words, it's a shame you're so young. If they would have realized more than this caged organ beats like hell inside me. If they would have just defined pacemaker as a parasite in a body I used to know. Made with love. The doctors poured deep breaths from coffee pots, fed me through IVs. They carved a slice in my warm bread of a body, served the scar sunny side up, embroidered my skin to match the napkin, they wiped their hands clean of blood and what's left. Hiccups and a hard, flat line, a heart so swollen you wonder if the battered mess will ever rise.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Karen Knickerbocker, reading from her collection, Next to Everything That is Breakable. So there's so much that I admire and love about what you're doing in your work, particularly in those last couple poems. You have this great repetition in the Beating poem where you have this anaphora that's building up, builds up the reader. So can you talk a little bit about why you decided to play with the form like that, why you decided to repeat, and how it works, you believe?
Sure. So in that particular poem, that came from an exercise, actually, that we did in a Mad Woman in the Attic workshop. We were studying Diane Glancy, and the assignment was an imitation poem of her poem, Those Old Voices Always Are With Me. So that's how I actually got the form for that one. But in the other one, if you're asking why I'm leaving, I really was drawn to the repetition and how it just really seemed effective in carrying through the meaning in almost a haunting sort of way. So as I was writing it and editing it, I just really felt like it was driving the meaning forward.
Yeah, a repetition has a way of doing that, but you have to find out where it works and where it doesn't. So that's neat. But do you think you get a lot of material from exercises or prompts?
I do. I don't usually write from prompts a lot, but I've found that when I do use prompts or do imitation poems, for example, like that one, it can sometimes produce my best work. So I'm always interested in trying on different voices, trying on different styles, and seeing how I can make the poem my own.
It takes a lot of guts, I think, to work with prompts because you have to let go so much. You have to sort of let it all go and just work with the prompt. So they can be exciting, but they can also be really intimidating.
I agree completely. Yeah.
So good for you. I have a hard time working with them. So then your other poems that were about traveling, you have that poem, They Told Me. There's an uncertainty that you play with, an impending darkness even. And I think that it leaves the reader dangling on an edge, which happens quite often in your work. So how do you use ambiguity? How do you play with that?
Well, I think that I've always been really drawn to an ending that leaves a punch or one that leaves the reader just completely wide open, not sure where to go from there. As a reader, I always wanted to feel a poem more than I really wanted to understand it. So as a writer, that's kind of what I strive for. I don't think that you need to spell it out for your audience. You don't need to spell it out for your readers. And leaving a little bit of mystery is beautiful. I really think it's effective in making the person that's reading your work really feel the emotion in it. Mm-hmm. And letting that poem breathe and leaving that door wide open. You know, you don't have to spell it all out for them.
Right. It gives them some ownership.
Exactly.
You know, to take over the poem and sort of put in whatever they want. But it's tricky, too, because then there's things that are unclear. And you might face a reader that's like, I thought you meant this. And that can be frustrating, too.
Exactly.
But I think a little ambiguity is great because you don't want to give it all away. You want to give the reader some responsibility.
Yeah, but at the same time, like you said, you have to define line between giving them, you know, too much and not giving them enough. You have to give them something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. You have to make them work a little bit.
Right.
But leaving that ending and, like you said, that ambiguity and almost this sort of impending darkness, I want to leave the reader with that haunting feeling, that edge of your seat feeling.
When you said that you aim to feel poetry more than sort of picture it, when you have completed a poem or when you're drafting, do you have a feeling that you want the reader to leave with? Or do you just want them to leave with some sort of feeling? And
I definitely want them to feel something.
Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to not have a set feeling that you want them to have.
Yeah, but if you leave them with something where it's almost uncomfortable, the person feels uncomfortable, kind of shaken, that's what I want. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I've noticed, that when I read poems that have that same particular type of ending, you know, I feel that shift within myself, and I'm really drawn to that. I'm really attracted to that. If a poem can make you feel something, you don't have to understand every line. You don't have to understand everything that the poet is putting on the page. But if you can feel something, if something between those lines made you feel some type of emotion, then I think it was effective. I think it was a good poem.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I definitely think leaving the reader with an emotion as opposed to some sort of narrative or visual can be just as effective. And it's always interesting to see what emotion they leave with, because it surprises me as a writer when I do that.
Right.
Can you read some more poems?
Sure. Portrait of Your Grandfather Dying. We will label it kidney failure or lung disease, but feel the swelling notion that he is not leaving us, but joining her, whose ashes answer his prayers at night from the bedside table where he props his cane, who framed the corner of his lips with the word happy, who gently takes the paintbrush and colors him home. He raged with war. He created love. He is ripe for heaven, Can you see it? So this next one, I grew up in the country and we had three ponds outside of our house. So I spent a lot of time in the woods and on the banks of the ponds catching salamanders. And so this poem is the true story of one of those memories from when I was younger. And the title is also the first line. Remember when I caught salamanders from the pond beside our house, counted 20 orange speckled bodies inside the glass bowl I stole from the kitchen. Remember how they gripped the sides of their new home for a way out, only to slide down, plop, on top of each other. I put flat rocks and leaves at the bottom, made it home. Remember how much I loved that they couldn't escape unless I let them? I wanted so badly to keep them, snuck the bowl upstairs to your bedroom. I can't remember where you were, but I was there, careful to listen for creaks of floorboards, the weight of someone sure to find me. They climbed across the plains of my open palms, pawed at the air when held up from the tail, and in the slow blink of a golden eye, maybe I knew it was wrong. So I kissed closed mouths. Remember their still wet, webbed feet made me feel like a mother. Remember I didn't know what salamanders ate, pushed the bowl far under your bed when called for dinner, never washed my hands of their spots, forgot after school the next day. Remember the slap of stench in the morning, murky with fresh death. Remember the look on my face when mother said she was missing a bowl. This is called Last Night Awake in Bed, and the title is also the first line. Last night awake in bed, and in between the rise and fall of your chest, I pleaded the morning wouldn't wake you, that the war wouldn't come creeping and rip you coldly from the covers. I know how you must have paced just the same, all this while waiting on me overseas, hoping I'd come back home. I am here now beside you in the dark, tracing the muscles in your back and thinking of how you will sleep, first in hotel beds and in the back seat of trucks, in aisle seats on airplanes, next to a stranger who will become like your brother on a stiff cot set on foreign ground. Your brown sugar eyes will drift and see slideshows in bullets, gunfire only God knows. Even if I hand wrote it in letters and cut through crosswire, they wouldn't know how your shallow breaths come in threes as you doze, or your feet that twitch just on the cusp of sinking. And they don't care if you wake. They will count you like numbered sheep. And as you'll be lacing your boots for another day, I will toss in the currents of an uncertain slumber with a dial tone sleeping against my ear. No heat of a body cradling my backbone, no awkward arm or hot breath on my neck, just hair-raised skin drenched from the soldiered sweat of a distant dream, trying to find its way back home. Formula. I have found there is no straight line to the surface, no borders to keep the hunger at bay when it crawls home into bed with me, and no way to find a solution to infinity. Still, I understand the equation. I know the way my cells burst when you pluck me from a field of lost, the way you smooth my insecurities like white linen on hotel beds. Most of all, I know the way my spine contracts and collapses, unraveling me at the sight of you leaving.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Kara Knickerbocker, reading from her collection, Next to Everything That is Breakable. So there's a lot of physical imagery in your poems, a lot of body imagery. Can you talk a little bit about how and why you're attracted to using the body, or how you see it playing in this collection even?
Sure. So as long as I can remember, I've always been attracted to writing about the body. I think that it's incredibly intimate. I love what it represents and what the human body is capable of. And as I was experiencing my health issues about a year ago, writing about that was therapeutic for me. So experiencing the body failing or the body in, you know, declining health, I found beauty in that. So I think that there's nothing more vulnerable than writing about the body and exposing everything through that.
You don't find it scary?
Of course I do, but I think that you have to take a risk. I think that as writers, as artists, you know, whatever your medium may be, you owe it to yourself. You can't worry about how it's going to sound, how it's going to look, how others are going to interpret it. You have to be real. You have to be raw. You have to show those emotions, even if it terrifies you.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, it can be tough, especially if it's personal, you know, to work with that type of material gets sticky, I think.
But a lot of times I think it produces some of my strongest work.
Yeah, you find out as you write sort of what you're good at or what you're drawn to, and then your obsessions can arise from that stuff too. Mm-hmm. It's not always revealed to you until you write things, which is the joy of writing, I suppose. So there's a lot of great sound in your work, consonants and assonance and alliteration. It's all over the place. So how important is that to your work? Are you conscious of that when you're drafting, or does that happen in revision?
I think it happens more in revision. I do try to be conscious of it when I'm writing, but sound is something that I continue to experiment with. You know, through traveling, I've come to appreciate language in a new way, and I do have a lot of alliteration, a lot of repetition in my poetry, and I think it just drives the meaning. It drives the mood of the poem. It helps connect with the image, makes everything so much richer. So it's something that I still experiment with and am very interested in.
Can you read some more poems?
Sure. The Foundation. We were shelving time until one of us could gather up the money or guts to say it. And you framed a place where we almost made love, carried us up steps to assemble a right way to start this. I laid the foundation right there myself on that cream carpet in your father's house, leaving a hinged mouth to the May night as if to welcome the idea of us beginning. We were tracking months of blueprints, hoping they would measure up, and you said you would keep the light on and build so long as I wrote. This is called Afterbirth. If I had one comfort in this new home, it would be in the fetal position, with my back against the open womb of a tub, pretending tears were from your shampooed hands that once held my head. I gave birth to a dream I wasn't ready for, but you nurtured it just the same. Even as I entered that pot-bellied plane, you knew would take your baby away. For weeks, I've daydreamed in starched sheets, missing you, my mother, and how it felt to be under a safe moon when setting sail was just a trip to the grocery store. I felt the amniotic fluid stream down your cheeks from 5,000 miles away, and wished that I could be more selfless, that the umbilical cord was never severed. I bought a dress yesterday with the euros you secretly tucked in my purse. They were fruits of your labor, the crowning reason I breathe, and I didn't even think to buy you a souvenir. Sex in the bedroom of a childhood home. Lips drift across clavicle bone. Just breathe, he whispers, but you can't. Not with your parents sleeping beneath these floorboards. You've never felt your naked body under this rose-printed quilt, never felt this much a child. Years ago, you learned to maneuver your weight around the exhale of wood, how to sidestep expanding cracks, sneaking upstairs at 16, fire water still dancing on your tongue. Yet now, an adult woman, you can't pinpoint the place where the worn mattress moans, how sound amplifies with the telling of two bodies, where the headboard grinds against the willing wall, or how hard. All the while, he fills you. Memories gather like glass figurines your mother carefully placed on the shelf when you moved away. Say it. When a child asks, "What is love?" describe it as a sunburn, from the first glow to stomach sky, like you swallowed the sun whole, bronzed, still basking in warmth. Explain passion as hot, hot heat. Tell of the love that sears through layer after delicate layer. Learn from the blisters. Just say how important it is to still know your own skin below when it all peels away. A dying art. I saw paintings there I wish I hadn't. Picasso dripping in his yellow sadness, heaving against the awning of a French silhouette. And there were Monets and Van Goghs slinking through Renaissance hallways, avoiding admission fees and knocking over oil paints. I was busy shaking hands with some 18th century architecture, continents short of the last home I loved, and thinking sculpting a way out of this depression was a dying art. Slow now. Before embers of Newports burn out like leaving the body unchained, before being baptized in wet cement next to everything that is breakable. Quick now, after drinking dusk with windows down, after crossing bridges built by new tongues, while we still taste a summer that is not yet ours.
The poetry of Kara Knickerbocker. Thank you so much, Kara, for being here.
Thank you, Lauren.
You're welcome. You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.